Do you know the number one thing that surprises engaged couples? Take a guess. The sheer amount of decisions they have to make while planning a wedding. Indoors or outdoors? How many guests? Are kids invited? Controversial. Which cake flavor? Seriously, how do you even begin to figure out what's right for you? That's where Zola comes in. Zola has everything you need to make every wedding decision a piece of cake, from choosing your dream wedding venue and vendors to deciding how to best spend your budget. With tons of customizable wedding websites, save the dates and invites, every detail will feel like you. Zola will even help you choose the gifts, experiences, and cash funds you really want. The next thing you know, you've planned your whole wedding all in one place. From getting engaged to getting married, Zola has everything you need to plan your wedding in one place. Start planning at Zola.com. That's Zola.com.
The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Here on Inside Black and Gold, getting you ready for Week 15. Saints 5-8, hosting the Commanders, who have the flipped record of 8-5. Jeff Nowak alongside Steve Geller, as always. And we're bringing in host of Locked On Commanders. I'm going to do my best to say Commanders every time, but I can't make it. Promise. David Harrison, finally covering a fun Commanders season. It must be, you know, after years and years of getting beaten down by the Washington football apparatus, it must be nice to finally have something fun to talk about out there. Huh?
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun this season, and just seeing the way this organization has turned around, and, you know, all the way from the top down, like just the great things that Josh Harris and the ownership group are doing to Adam Peters. And you know, it's been really interesting, because I would say that the last staff was a little easier to get information out of, yet I would say we didn't converse with them near as much. But this staff, I mean, like assistant GM Lance Newmark, you know, talk to him on almost a weekly basis, but we can't get anything out of him, you know, as far as like stuff to get inside information. They're very good at keeping that information, you know, close to the vest, which is good for them, obviously. But, you know, it's been an interesting dynamic getting to know them better as people. And you just kind of really see just the values and the chemistry and the culture that they're actually trying to install, and how it really resonates with every member of the organization.
Yeah. Looking at the coaching staff, whole new staff here this year for the Commanders, obviously a new quarterback, and everything has really gelled, come together quickly, obviously, with the, you know, 8-5 record. For you, what has been the biggest standout for a guy like Dan Quinn, what he's brought to the team and the organization?
Yeah, just competitive culture. You know what I mean? Like, at the end of the day, you know, it's really interesting, because a lot of people hear like, oh, well, you know, you just really like this team because they go out there and they compete and they give that effort and all that kind of like, oh, darn shucks type of stuff. And you know, I think all of us, you get into watching football and it's like, no duh, they could go out there and compete. But the truth of the matter is, not every NFL team competes, right? Like, they don't actually all go out there and lay it on the line. And I think coaching absolutely matters in a lot of levels. And that's one of those levels, is really installing kind of that spirit of a warrior, of a combatant, you know. And I was actually, you know, just telling Ross Jackson of Locked On Saints on our crossover episode today that, like, watching the New Orleans Saints, you know, the difference between Dennis Allen and Darren Rizzi, like, you can see that this Saints team is different just because of the kind of the atmosphere that their coach provides for them, and almost that Dan Campbell-esque type of attitude. And it's funny, because I would say that Dan Campbell, Darren Rizzi, and Dan Quinn actually are very similar in their approach and similar in their kind of mantras and the way that they want to attack the game. But Dan is obviously the least demonstrative of that. You know what I mean? And that's perfectly fine. But I think it absolutely matters. And that's kind of where it really starts with Dan Quinn and what's really trickled down throughout this entire organization.
I would say maybe it's like a DA thing, but we just had a DA and that didn't work. So like the first two, clearly that's not, you know, because Dan, I'm sorry, that was bad. But, you know, speaking of kind of culture changes, I kind of think so. I agree with what you're saying. The coach is a big part of that. But I also think just having a quarterback that feels like, okay, we can go out there and win a game with, like, mm-hmm. is the guy. I feel like that trickles down throughout a locker room as much as anything, as much as kind of the leadership from the top, whatever. Like yep. if DA had Drew Brees, I think DA's tenure would have gone completely differently. He didn't have Drew Brees. He had this kind of hodgepodge of whoever. Derek Carr wasn't that guy. And then it just never worked. I just feel mm-hmm. like when you have that quarterback and the head coach that you feel confident in, it makes for just this, that's the recipe you need. And you can build around that. What have you seen from Jaden? How have you kind of seen him take, no pun intended, take command of that room and that team, mm-hmm. that organization? Because it just seems like when you have that guy in place, it's a lot easier to be confident about a team.
Yeah, I think what's really interesting about Jaden is he's kind of just steered into the natural leadership presence that a quarterback has, right? Like he hasn't really come into the team trying to say, this is my team, this is my locker room, I'm going to lead the way. He's just kind of let it come naturally. Like even to this day, if you ask him what it feels like to be a star quarterback, he's going to kind of just laugh it off and be like, I'm a rookie, dude. I'm not a star quarterback. Like I haven't done anything in this league, you know? And a lot of people look at it and be like, okay, well that's the right thing to say from a PR standpoint. But honestly, that's how he actually truly feels about it, you know? But it's important for every team to have leadership, you know, and we ask, it's funny, every time we go to the scouting combine, I laugh because 200 players get asked, what's your leadership style? And it's like we expect every NFL player that straps on pads to be a leader. But the truth of the matter is they don't all have to be leaders. In fact, they can't all be leaders. That would be a miserable existence if every member of your roster was trying to be the leader of the group. But this team has a quarterback, like you mentioned, where the natural leadership part of being a quarterback, he aces, right? He gets into the building early. He puts in the work. He does his own walkthroughs with guys like Luke McCaffrey before the official walkthroughs to make sure he's ready, which is actually kind of funny because my past career, I remember laughing with other people about the pre-meeting to have the planning meeting to plan the event. Like, but that's kind of what Jaden does, but it also shows how effective he can be. But he's not afraid to turn over the leadership reins to a guy like Terry McLaurin or Zach Ertz or even Bobby Wagner. And it's actually kind of a small part of what Dan Quinn has done. And it's really interesting. The locker room is mixed. Like a lot of locker rooms I've been in, it's quarterbacks are here, receivers are here, you know, so on and so forth. But like Jaden Daniels' locker is next to Luke McCaffrey and Percy Butler, a wide receiver and a safety. And Marcus Mariota is like five lockers down next to an O lineman. Like it's just a very integrated locker room and a very integrated team. And what it's created is there doesn't have to be one guy. There just has to be a guy. And in every situation, there's got to be a dude that leads the way. And fortunately, when it's time for Jaden to lead the way, usually he's stepped up in that moment. Usually it's on the field, you know what I mean? But he's stepped up in those moments. And I think down the road, as he gets his NFL legs under him, does get a little bit more accomplished to where he can say, okay, I've done some things now. When that time comes for him to be that true, upfront, fully fledged leader, he's going to be really well prepared for it.
Yeah, mentioning that Jaden Daniels, obviously the escapability and his mobility, a huge concern for the Saints going into this matchup. They've had issues containing mobile quarterbacks. I can't even remember the last time they were able to stop somebody. The run game as a whole has been a problem too, and you got a Brian Robinson Jr. over there too. Obviously, that's been the, I guess, driving force of this Commanders offense right now under Cliff Kingsbury. Talk about that, what they've been able to do overall in the ground and pound, but also Jaden's also been effective and efficient as a passer.
Yeah. No, I love that you guys said that, and it really shows how intelligent you are about the topic and your preparation, which is, you know, again, not common for everybody, unfortunately, but this team really is a run-first team. I know Jaden is the star, and Jaden is the name that everybody wants to talk about, and the Pepsi Rookie of the Week numbers and all that stuff, and those are all great, don't get me wrong, but this is a run first team. And it's not just a run first team. It's a power run first team. That's where Brian Robinson Jr. really comes in, because when you see this team without B-Rob on the field, when it's Austin Eckler trying to lead the way or Jeremy McNichols trying to lead the way, it's just not the same. You know, and like any other quarterback, Jaden Daniels has a much more comfortable platform to operate off of when that running game is operating. And in games where Brian Robinson is averaging 4 yards or more, the Commanders are undefeated. In games where he's averaging less than 4 yards per carry, they're 2-3. They have a losing record. And then the games where he's not even active on the field, the offense has had really a hard time getting their footing underneath them. So it just shows you how important that power run presence is. Now, last week, and then even a little bit against the New York Giants in week 9, they kind of found Chris Rodriguez Jr., who's a 6th-round pick from last year, hasn't gotten a lot of burn during his 2 NFL seasons so far. But when he does get opportunities, he also brings a power presence. So if this team is trying to preserve Brian Robinson for what's hopefully going to be a postseason run, I think it makes a lot of sense to integrate Chris Rodriguez a little bit more and do those kinds of things. So we'll see how they balance those two, especially with Austin Eckler out after having that terrible concussion against the Dallas Cowboys. So it's going to be really interesting, but it's really astute of you to mention that, because when you go back to that losing streak, one of the things that still stands out to this day, and really honestly, every time the run game comes up, the first thing that pops in my mind is the fact that the Philadelphia Eagles didn't stack the box against Brian Robinson a single time that entire game, and they were successful. Like, Brian Robinson had one of his lowest yards per carry games against that Philadelphia Eagles team and showed what they were able to do with just an organic front, and that allowed them to play this Bermuda triangle coverage around Terry McLaurin that took him out of the game and really put a lot of pressure on Jaden Daniels, who really looked like a rookie the most that we've seen all season in that game. So when you're talking about the New Orleans Saints, and you mentioned kind of the run defense struggles a little bit, like, if they have to stack the box, or if they've got to bring as many, every extra defender they got to bring in to try to stop Brian Robinson or maybe Chris Rodriguez Jr. in that run game, that just opens up passing lanes for Jaden Daniels. And it also brings defenders closer to the line of scrimmage. And, you know, I don't know if you guys are LSU fans, but if you watch LSU football being, you know, and tied to New Orleans, you know what happens when Jaden Daniels has a lot of defenders near the line of scrimmage. He's going to go around him and down the field, and they're going to be chasing behind him. And that's the kind of thing that makes him operate the best. I think that that's what we saw them get back to really against the Tennessee Titans in a very dominant win before the bye.
Yeah, I was on, I can't remember what station I was on in Washington yesterday, but it was like, they're like, what are you most concerned about? And I was like, I'm not concerned about anything individual. I'm concerned about the ability to stop both of Brian Robinson and Jaden Daniels. No. Like, I think they'll be able to stop one of them. I just don't think they'll be able to stop both of them. You know, the other thing that we're familiar with is how to pronounce Olamide Zaccheaus. So
that's how you do it.
Proud of myself on that. But switching sides of the ball, you know, a guy that you couldn't have written a script any better for this season. Marshawn Lattimore gets traded away. Mm-hmm. First game with his new team happens to be in the building that he's played all of his home games in for his entire career. Yeah. But this time he probably doesn't even know where the visitor's locker room is. But that's where he's going to be hanging out going into this game. So, you know, what has been kind of the mood around Marshawn? It had to have been a little bit frustrating to watch them make that trade, then to see them lose a couple games while he's kind of on the pine there with the hamstring. Now he's obviously getting back 8-5. You know, it's not, you know, that's a kind of a dangerous record. You got to win a couple more games to feel comfortable. You drop a couple more and suddenly that's ugly. So where is the confidence level around this defense around Marshawn getting into the game this week?
Yeah, the defense overall has gotten better in a lot of aspects. Their run defense is still somewhat suspect. Fortunately for the Commanders, their perimeter run defense has actually gotten a little bit better, which is where I think they expect Alvin Kamara to try to do his most damage. Now, you know, he's Alvin Kamara, so he's still going to do his damage, I think. No matter how much better the Commanders' perimeter run defense has gotten, I still think it's going to happen. Their interior run defense has also been suspect, so I expect the Saints to try to do some things there as well. And I really think the ground game is going to dictate a lot of this. As far as Marshawn Lattimore is concerned, it's actually been kind of interesting. I think the fans in Washington are one topic and the media is another topic. I think in the beginning, we all kind of expected or anticipated, I should say, this Davante Adams miracle healing of the hamstring situation to happen. But then when he got on ground, we saw him very first day. He's over there with the trainers and he's not even jogging. You know what I mean? And we're all kind of standing there like, man, like he's not even jogging a little bit. Like he's just walking and stretching. Like, okay, so this hamstring's probably legit. And Dan Quinn, you know, another thing I'll give him credit for has always been as upfront as he can be as a coach with us. So when Marshawn first got in, he's like, look, you know, we didn't trade for him for, you know, this weekend. We traded for him for down the road and we don't know how far down the road that's going to be, but it's going to be down the road. So he kind of prepped us a little bit. Pretty quickly, most of us kind of got into this mode looking at the schedule. We're like, you know what? New Orleans is probably his first time on the field. And so from a media aspect, we've all kind of accepted that from, you know, it's been a few weeks now, but we've all kind of accepted that. Fans have been a little bit less willing to accept that, a little bit more frustrated. And you know, the losing doesn't help. I mean, if they beat the Steelers, the Eagles, the Cowboys, it's not nearly as much of a frustration for the fan base than it is, especially with, you know, Benjamin St. Juice giving up a late touchdown, you know, in the Pittsburgh game and so on and so forth. But for Marshawn, I mean, he's been great. You know, he's historically known as not a big talker. He doesn't really like to do a lot of chirping in the media. That's been consistent. But when we have had opportunities to talk to him, he's been great. The atmosphere that he brings into the group. We've talked to several guys about the impact that he can make in the room, even though he's not on the field, just kind of bringing that extra competitive gear. So that's something that we've seen the secondary get a little bit more aggressive. And we're all really looking forward to it, especially because the Commanders don't have steady captains. So Marshawn Lattimore is probably going to be a team captain, his very first game active for the team, which is a little bit unique, but obviously it makes a lot of sense for him to be. And I know that, you know, any player, whether there's hard feelings or not, they want to do well against their former team. And so he's going to want to go out there and have a good performance against the Saints.
Yeah, for sure. Jeff, you know, you were in the locker room with Tyron yesterday. He made the comment of part of Tyron Matthew wants the offense to go at him and attack him. But he's like, there's the other part. Just stay away and, you know, kind of have him be in, not in factor this entire game with no stats.
All right. Just a couple more questions here and I'll let you go. First of all, what have you been doing to the kickers? Why do you keep they keep getting hurt? And I don't get it. It's Zane Gonzalez again now, right? Like we're back to Zane Gonzalez. All right. And so second, what was your reaction? So we commiserate because if you ever saw the River City Relay and then John Carney, you know, yanking that extra point, which was even worse then because, you know, extra points were a lot shorter then. What was your reaction? Did you do the surrender cobra? Like, what was your reaction when you saw Cyber yank that extra point against the Cowboys?
Yeah, I mean, that was one of those games. You know, we talk about covering this Washington football team of old. And the biggest thing about Washington rosters before Dan Quinn and this team arrived was just the lack of complimentary football. You know, when the offense did well, the defense surrendered, whatever. When the defense did well, the special teams couldn't get it together. When the special teams did well, neither of the other two could get it together. And when the players were doing fine, the coaches messed it up. Like, that was just the way that Washington football was before Dan Quinn arrived. And that game is basically that. You know what I mean? And fortunately, it's a one-off right now. Hopefully it stays the one-off. But that was that game. You know, I mean, just the beginning of the second half, the Washington Commanders offense came out of the locker room, ran the ball right down the field, scored a touchdown, and it's like, okay, here we go. And then the defense just gives up another drive to the Cowboys. And it's like, okay, maybe not. And then, you know, you have the 86-yard pass to Terry McLaurin, and we can't make field goals. We get the game, you know, tie or, you know, close to tied up. Now you're competitive, and you give up a kick return to a player that we literally spent the entire week talking about. So we know that there was all kinds of game plans about how to keep Kevontae Turpin from doing exactly what he did. So, you know, it was just one of those games, man. You know, every team has a bad game here and there. And, you know, unless you're the Kansas City Chiefs and have that extra teammate, you know, it's hard to overcome those things. So I think that's really what it boils down to. But as far as the kicker situation, it's been wild. I mean, to think that this team is on its sixth kicker since the opening of camp, like that's it's absolutely insane. But then also to think about, like, there have been moments where the kicking game, like Cade York in week one, obviously was a disaster, and that's why he was no longer with the team. But like overall, the kicking situation really hasn't been this like majorly disruptive factor in this season. And to have six kickers and not actually say that, I think is I don't know the process of kicking. Like, I've had conversations with Martin Gramatica over the years, and even some of the things that he's explained to me, I'm still like, I don't get it. Like, to me, it's just running up and kicking a football, but there's so much more to it. So for this scouting department, for Adam Peters and his staff to go out there and find kickers they can be successful with, six deep, right? Like, Zane Gonzalez wasn't playing football 4 weeks ago, and they still have him, and you know, he's done well. He missed some kicks as well, but overall, he's done well. It's kind of amazing to think about, and it's a really just weird footnote to what this season has been.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I've always felt like when you're a better kicker if you have a good kicker name. Like Ryan Longwell was always going to be a good kicker. David Akers, you know, guys like that. Even Zane. Zane's a pretty cool name. I feel like that works. I think
that's Gonzalez with a Z, so that works too.
Exactly. Now it's important. If you have a name that fits your job, you're like 10% better at it. That's just like as a rule of universe.
What's up with the resurgence of tight end Zach Ertz, man? I know the last three games he scored a touchdown and really seems to be getting on the same page, obviously, with Jaden Daniels. And the obviously Scary Terry is still the big main focus of that passing attack, and probably like one of the Rodney Dangerfields of wide receivers, doesn't get enough respect. But man, I'm just really impressed what Ertz has been able to do now in this offense. And that's another concern I have too going into this matchup, because Saints and covering tight ends has been an issue.
Yeah, Zach Ertz has been great. You know, after covering Logan Thomas with this team, when they brought in Zach Ertz, I was like, okay, coach in the locker room, coach on the field,
right?
You know, probably not going to bring much on the field. And then we get to the first veteran minicamp and that dude's out there flying around the field. I'm like, whoa, like this dude is not what I expected. You know, I expect, and no disrespect to Logan Thomas, but his age and his injuries had just kind of been showing on the field. And so when Zach Ertz came out, I was like, man, this dude is really impressive. And the dedication he puts into taking care of his body. I mean, I've never seen somebody with so much ice packed on his joints after a game or even a practice sometimes than you see Zach Ertz walking around, and just kind of shows the dedication he has to doing this. It's actually interesting because in the beginning, especially during training camp, like that connection between Zach and Jaden was really strong, was really building, and a lot of excitement was built up around Zach. And I feel like a lot of Commanders probably drafted Zach Ertz to their fantasy rosters. And then early in the season, that connection didn't show up as much. So it's interesting because if you look at overall where Zach came from leaving the Cardinals practice squad with the Lions and what he's doing now, like you said, like this career resurgence, it's amazing. But when you look at the expectations following training camp in the preseason to what he's actually done, it's actually a little bit of a dip. But like you said, it's definitely getting better with Noah Brown, their number two wide receiver, now being out for what looks like the rest of the season. Zach was already second on the team in targets anyway, but now it looks like, you know, that's probably going to be that even that target rate is going to go up a little bit more as they try to figure this whole thing out. But, you know, Zach has been great. The leadership has been great. What he's doing with other tight ends like John Bates, Ben Sinnott, the rookie, and even Cole Turner, who's on the practice squad and not getting any burn right now, has been great. And I think that whether this is a one and done deal with Zach in Washington or not, whatever he's doing this season is going to have a lasting impact on this offense for years to come.
Yeah, I've always said if I'm drafting a rookie quarterback, the second thing I'm doing is going and signing the most veteran tight end. I'm throwing a bag at him because, like, it's just such a benefit to have for a young guy to have that kind of safety net around him. Like, you want a guy who knows what he's doing at the tight end position. One more quick question, I'll let you go. As you mentioned, Noah Brown is out with that kidney issue. Who would you say at the wide receiver room beyond Terry McLaurin is the guy to watch out for if you're the Saints kind of picking, like, okay, who's getting those targets this week?
Yeah, so something that Cliff Kingsbury has always been good at is being incredibly consistent, and defensive coordinators, I'm sure, really appreciate that. He lines his people up pretty much in the same spot all the time. Terry McLaurin is lined up split wide left about 76% of the time this season. So you pretty much know where 17 is going to be for the most part. After Noah Brown, De'Ami Brown has the most split wide right reps this season. He's got 144 snaps out there. Alamide Zaccheaus has 120 snaps wide right this year. So those two are probably going to be it. I don't know if I would expect either of them to really get a huge target increase, to be quite honest with you. But I think Alamide Zaccheaus, in my mind, has the most upside for this offense, especially with the kind of return to the quicker passing game. Alamide is a little bit better in the short area of the field, whereas De'Ami is more of that long, deep strider type of guy. But also, you know, we saw Terry McLaurin, you know, season low, only 70% of his reps were split wide left against the Tennessee Titans. Sorry, it's a little Washington joke, only 70%. But, you know, I wouldn't necessarily be surprised if Terry McLaurin didn't line up a little bit more on the right side with Noah Brown being gone. The great thing about Terry, or one of the great things about Terry, is he knows every route on every play. You know what I mean? Like, even if he never lines up in the right slot, which he never does, he knows what the right slot receiver is going to do on that play because he uses it to try to dictate how he runs his routes, or maybe if he cuts short or do whatever. So I wouldn't necessarily be surprised to see Terry McLaurin kind of get some more burn on the right side of the formation, given the fact that the Saints don't travel their defensive backs. You know, it wouldn't be a bad idea for Cliff to kind of probe on the left, probe on the right. Okay, where are we getting the best matchups? And now let's take advantage of that. And if Terry's doing better on the right side, which I think that would be Kool-Aid, right, would be on the left side of the Saints defense, if I'm correct. Wherever that matchup is best for Terry, I mean, you know, the old, you know, football adage is keep doing it until they stop it. And if Terry can take advantage of one guy or the other, figure it out and ride it all day long.
Yeah. And if you're a consistency guy, replacing Brown with Brown would just feel right. So
make it easier on the broadcast team.
Yes, that's true. Yeah. Mike Haas is our play by play guy. We'll be thrilled if that's the case. he doesn't have to sit there pronouncing Zacchaeus all day long. But all right. David Harrison, host of Locked On Commanders, thanks so much. Really do appreciate your time. Great insight.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys. Also practice Noah Igbinoghene, slot defender on the Washington Bears defense, because we'll see. But he might be a name, especially if they stay away from Marshawn. He might be a name that gets spoken about a lot.
I'm going to call him Noah O. That's what I'm going to go with.
You can just do that. Noah, no I. You just call him slot defender.
That's an O. Oh, my God. I can't even get
it. Number one. You know what I mean? We go the old football reg, number one.
That's what we're going to go with. Number one. But all right, man. Appreciate it.
Appreciate you guys. Thank you.
Thank you.
Cool. Thanks again to David Harrison for coming on. A lot of good insight there. You know, it's just funny. Like, if you had talked to probably David this time last year, you would have got, you know, like we do the interview with Dez Johnson of the Panthers. And it's like, if we talked to him at this point, he would just be beaten down. Like, oh my God, we're doing it again. It's another season. We got 3 weeks. Kind of like us. Like, I'm exhausted by this. We got 3 weeks, 4 weeks to go. And I'm like, God, we still got to talk about football. Like, this is miserable. Can't we just start talking about the draft? Nope, there's games to play. So we got to talk about it. But then you got the Commanders. They're 8-5. And it's like, 8-5 isn't an incredible record. It's a good record, but like when you've set those baseline so low, 8-5 is like, holy crap, we're great.
Right. There's still hope there, obviously.
Yeah. And here's the thing. It could still go badly. Like your 8-5 is not, you know, you got to win two more games. You got to win two of your final four games to feel like, man, okay, we are in control of this. They probably will. I mean, they'll probably beat the Saints. I have a really hard time seeing the Saints win this game, but like, even if they do go 1-3 over the final four games and go 9-8, I still think the resounding idea in Washington would be success story. Because you got the young quarterback, you're on the they're the Texans of this year, right?
Like, right, that's exactly. Totally agree.
And even in the sense that they got the number two pick instead of the number one and still ended up with a better quarterback out of the deal.
Yeah, similar there too with obviously the Texans.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they could have ended up with I'm not out on Caleb Williams. I think Caleb Williams is going to be good, but I just don't like the way he plays.
And even you look at Bryce this year has made some steps. So yeah, they're, it's not a totally bust as everybody wanted to label even Bryce Young after year one.
We'll see. I'm not
right.
I'm not,
we'll see.
Not, exactly. Not on Bryce, just like I'm not out on Caleb. But I just the thing, and you're going to watch the Commanders play on Sunday, and you're going to see this is. Jaden Daniels plays the game the way you want him to play it. He plays winning football, right? And there's a difference, and it's a clear difference between how he plays the game and how a lot of rookies play the game, in that, like, it's not hard to understand why they win games with him back there, because he doesn't play hero ball. He makes the right decision over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. He runs the offense the way it's supposed to run and makes plays when he has to make plays. You know, and that, to me, is a lot of times the difference between, okay, yeah, you're close, you're competitive, and then you just did something really stupid and like took a 16-yard sack on 2nd and 10 for no reason after you scrambled around for 12 minutes and were like, I'm not throwing it away. I can, you know, like that's the type of thing that Caleb does. It drives me nuts every time. Like, I've only watched like 4 or 5 Bears games this year, but like, I don't think that I've watched the only 4 or 5 Bears games where he has played the way he played in those games.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I think that's a big enough sample size. Whereas like the Commanders games I've watched, one of them was the Eagles game, and that was probably his worst game. And even in that, I was like, he's playing smart football. He's not effective, but he's playing correctly. And that's why, like, you're going to watch Jaden on Sunday and you're going to be like, that doesn't look like a rookie. And that's why you feel good about it. And it's the same thing I would have said about CJ Stroud last year. He's doing the same stuff.
Yeah, with Jaden, he's number two in quarterback rushing yards. No surprise, Lamar Jackson's number one. So I'm curious. What's that?
I didn't realize he was number two.
Yeah, number two in QB rushing yards. And, yeah, for you, I got to see Lamar up close and personal field level and just has that ability to just, it seems to, like, disappear and vanish from defenders. And curious, you know, what you end up seeing out of Jaden Daniels come field level, because I'm sure he's going to be a blast to watch, unfortunately, going against the Saints defense.
Yeah, I don't think Jaden and Lamar are the same. I don't think they play this. Like, Lamar is a running back when he gets into the open field. Like, Jaden is a quarterback who's running. He's just very, it's tough. Like, I think Lamar and Josh Allen are a lot more similar than Lamar and Jaden, whereas Jaden's a little more like a Kyler Murray, where, like, you're not expecting him to run, but when he does run, you're just like, Jesus, he's fast.
Right, exactly. I've compared, like, at least when he was at LSU, seeing him a ton, it seemed like he was almost like a speed skater and just gliding, be able to move around defenders.
The Paulo Anton Ohno. yeah, no, that's a good, yeah, he does. He moves so gracefully. He's like a gazelle. Yeah. But no, and that's the thing, like, you're like, and but it's smart. Like, that's what you need to be. You need the ability to run in the NFL, but that can't be your game, right? Because if you want to be a long-term quarterback, if you want to win consistently, like, well, one of the reasons the Ravens haven't won a Super Bowl to this point is how many playoff runs have they gone on to without Lamar, because he's hurt. And so, you know, he's gotten better at that. And that's one of the reasons that I think when I say I think the Ravens are going to win the Super Bowl, it's because, like, you look at it, oh, they've lost a couple games here and there. And it's because you don't see the same Ravens team in these games as you're going to see in the playoffs, because during the regular season, you're going to naturally just be like, have the reins a little tighter on Lamar, being like, we don't need that right now. We don't need that right now. We just need one. But once we get into the postseason, all bets are off and you're just letting him go. And so you're the same thing with Josh Allen. You're going to see a different guy who's willing to, like these plays in the big moments. Like, if you see a game-winning drive, you'll notice, like, Lamar and Josh Allen are different guys, because they're just like, I'm going to run now. And so, yeah. But
anyway. I rarely give betting advice, because I'm not the guy, but the under-over for rushing yards and Jaden Daniels in this game is 38.5. It seems like a no-brainer to pound the over here.
You say that, but at the same time, you look at his rushing stats on the year, and they're not crazy. Like, he's only had 5 games where he's gone over that. So
I know, but he's got the Saints this week.
Yeah, but they might just spy him. They might just throw Willie Gay in there and say, chase him around. And if that's the case, then, you know, he's going to end up throwing the ball. And he'll probably have a lot of anyway, that's neither here nor there. But anytime you see a line and you're like, oh, that's definitely going to hit, be careful, because you're almost always
that is definitely scary. But like I said, I'm like, I saw that and it seemed awfully low to me.
Here's the thing. He's probably
going to get one run could be 38 yards.
That's what I was just about to say. He's probably going to get it on one run. You know, he's probably going to have like a 40-yard touchdown run and you're going to be done. But it's tough. It's tough. Anyway, let's wrap up this segment. We're going to come back. We're going to hit some X factors in the game, what we think is going to swing the matchup. There's not a lot of players to talk about these days. They're all hurt. So we'll probably could just go with every starting member on the roster and be like, X, 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 X. Anyway, that's it. This is Inside Black and Gold. I'm Jeff Nowak. He is Steve Geller. Hit that subscribe button. We will be right back.